So you go into a business or you see a business, what are the top three things that an organization should get started with to enhance and improve their employee engagement?
I think it starts with what we started with, knowing your non-negotiables and walking and talking your core values. So that's number one. Then the second one is train leadership into asking questions, not telling people what to do. As leader, you're not the best in the team. You're the best facilitator in the team. And thirdly, and most important part is work on the teams that they start believe what you're saying.
Welcome to the Hands On Business Podcast. Where else are you going to come to get tips, tricks, and advice on growing your business? As you know, what people tend to love about this podcast is that it is a place where you can hear real business leaders discussing systems, methodology, and strategies that they have used to help them catapult growth in their business. So I'm your podcast host, Hakeem Adebiyi, and I've grown several small businesses to multi-million pound enterprises and noticed that there wasn't really a place that focused on where I was, i.e. growing a small business. All of the content that seemed to be out there was about big business and often just a lot of theory and no practical implementable advice, which is exactly why I set up this podcast. So take a listen, enjoy, and start implementing the strategies that you hear on the podcast. Happy listening. On one of our most recent episodes, we talked about how we can attract, hire, and retain talent. And we got some great feedback and lots of questions specifically around the topic of retaining people, as what's the point of getting the right people if you can't manage them appropriately and retain them? However, what about those people that you didn't recruit, the ones that are already there and you want to engage them? So that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show with Paul Tavall. Paul focuses on helping companies to improve the engagement of their employees because, as he says, happiness makes money. So today's episode is all going to be about the key steps to get a more engaged workforce and why that matters. So welcome, Paul. Good to have you on.
Thank you, Hakeem. Nice to be on your show.
Excellent. So we're going to get straight into it. We're talking about employee engagement. So can you give us just an insight as to why employee engagement is important for the overall success of any organization?
I think it's the basis of the customer experience, about profitability. It's all about the employees, the people that work within your organizations. They are supposed to be the professionals that deliver services, that deliver goods, that make products that you can sell to the customer. So if you have engaged employees, your productivity will rise, sick leave will go down, retention will go up. A lot of stuff that Gallup is researching, but other universities as well. So I think having the best employees working for your company is the most important part. It's not about buildings. It's not about software. It's not about hardware. It's not about finance. It's about human beings.
And so, you know, you talked a couple of that thing there, that sickness goes down, productivity goes up. I know everyone listening and watching, the ears will prick up when you talk about productivity going up. So in terms of that, so what would you describe as the key KPIs then that you should be looking at? If you're looking at employment engagement, what are the key indicators of an engaged workforce?
Well, if you measure it with the Q12 questions of Gallup, which is done all over the world. So it's the only research that we can say over the last 20 years, it's the most stable research that we can see. And what you see, it's all about autonomy. Do people feel that they have influence on their work? It doesn't need to be that much. A cleaning person needs to have influence on their job. They are the professionals. Secondly, and during COVID, we found out that it's very important, belonging. Do you belong to a team? Do you belong to an organization that you can identify with? Do you value the core values, the non-negotiables of that organization? Third, the competences. Is the organization willing to train you to support talent development? Because we all have talents, and sometimes we know them, sometimes we're not aware of them. And if you want to have a successful organization, you need to find where the talents of your people are. And in Dutch, we have the ABCD, and the D stands for purpose. So in English, it's a P. But the organization needs to have a purpose. People need to know why. Simon Sinek copied Aristotle and others on saying, if you want to be successful, you need to have your why. You need to have a purpose. And it's not that high purpose that you see nowadays. It's about saving the planet. No, it's just common sense. Your organization, why do you do what you do? And can people connect to the core values that are connected to those, to that purpose? And I love the American word non-negotiable as a translation of core values, because I see sometimes organizations, a new CEO comes in, they go on a Friday afternoon to some hotel in the forest and they create new core values. And on Monday, it's on the website, on the internet, and everybody believes it. Not. So the non-negotiables is that where you stand for. What is your why as an organization? And if I'm looking at your website and on the homepage, I can see what you stand for, what your purpose is, and what your non-negotiables are. I can say, that's an interesting company. I connect with those core values and I want to work there. So if you want to get new employees and if you want to retain them, work on your core values. Find the people that are aligning. They don't need to have the same, because that's silly, but they need to connect to, they need to align to the core values of the organization, because then they can thrive. Then they will put that extra step. They will do something more than normal people do. And Gallup always says we have fully engaged people, we have not engaged people, and fully disengaged people. And we say that not so really engaged people are the satisfied people. I come in time, I leave in time, I get my money in time, I'm quite happy, it's good, and they sound that way. And what you want is those people that are so energetic that they come with a lot of energy to your company, and they leave with even more energy because they have a private life as well. They need energy there. That's what all is all about engagement.
Excellent. And actually, it's interesting because I've been on a couple of programs recently where we've talked about core values. And I think Bill Flynn described it as, you know, and it comes into that non-negotiables, and he's an American, in terms of, okay, so if you contravene that core value, would I sack you for it? And if I let you to get away with it twice and I wouldn't sack you for it, it's not really a core value then, is it? Because if you're contravening the core value, there should be some consequence for it. So in terms of, you know, the core values and the purpose, etc. How, you know, because one of the things you said there was that people should feel that they have a purpose themselves and that they have an influence on their job because they're the professionals. So how can an organization assess that level of employee engagement? How do they assess whether or not somebody has a purpose within their workforce?
Well, what we see, we have tools for it. It's called the Energy Compass. And we can measure the level of energy that you're getting from your work. But we can also see on what items in the workforce you're losing energy. For example, a lot of people need feedback. And then we say, yeah, it needs to be positive feedback. It doesn't matter. But a lot of leaders don't give feedback to their employees. They don't tell them what they see what they need. So the normal question for a leader is, how can I support you? Managers will tick the boxes. Did you do enough? Leaders will ask questions. How can I support you? Are you doing okay? So it's more that we want people to find energy in their work instead of that they're losing energy on quarrels, on not having a good role description, about conflicts in the workplace. That kind of stuff, people will lose a lot of energy, work stress. And that leads finally to something that is called burned out. It's not the same as burnout complaints. That's something different. But what we see a lot is that people come into the office and within an hour, they lose energy. And what we want to find out with human beings is, where are you losing your energy during work and where are you gaining energy? And I can tell you, 70% of the time, the leader is influencing that energy level. It's the way you talk to people. It's the way you support people. I work for companies, they have a sick leave of 10, 12%. And in the Netherlands, that will cost you a lot of money because the first year you pay 100% of the income and the second year 70%. So, but we're still in control, so we can help those people. But what we see is that people are feeling sick and calling in sick because they don't feel supported. And like you said, if somebody is not keeping up with the non-negotiables, don't sack them immediately. Ask the question, why aren't you accountable for what we decided? And maybe something happened in their private life that they can't be accountable because they have financial issues, a family member died, they don't have the energy to perform. Support those people, because they can be very valuable for your organization. So start a conversation. We're all human beings. We know what's happening in life. So it's not that you can separate business from private life. It's influencing one another, and especially with social media, which is terrible, of course, but it's influencing one another. So I think a leader should always have one first question: how can I support you? And if somebody says, I have no clue, I don't know what you're talking about, sack them. Because they are not accountable for what they're doing. If I sign a contract with you, Hakim, I'm accountable for performing according to that contract. If I'm not doing that, that's my responsibility. And you can hold me accountable for not performing in alignment with the core values. But if people can't influence it, then we should try to support them. And there are countries, Western Europe countries, that support people in their well-being in an enormous way. Still, engagement is quite low. If I compare Europe, Western Europe, with the US and Canada, it's almost double the amount in the US and Canada than it is in Europe. So maybe culture is influencing engagement as well. In the US, for example, it's now actually 34%. This engagement is about 25%. So in Europe, it's about 14% engaged people and 17% fully disengaged people. So in Europe, we need to work hard on those satisfied people to push them to the front and push them into engagement. And that's what you need to work for. Because let's be honest, all the people, you and I and many millions of people, want to have a good life, want to have a good well-being, want to have supportive environment. But sometimes it happens that you can't get that support. Well, then the organization needs to be there and fill in that gap.
And then, so You've identified its culture in the US compared to Europe. So what is different about their culture that they're getting 34% engagement and then in Europe we're getting about 14%? Well, that seems like a massive disparity.
Yeah, I think, and I've traveled 15, 16 times to the US and I talked to a lot of Americans during the year. Like I said, in the Netherlands, if you get ill, you will be supported for 12 years financially because we want you to drop out. We have an amazing healthcare system. We have quite good education program, all free. You don't pay that much for your health insurance like in the US. 80% is covered by what I pay, €150 a month. So 12 times, that's €2,000. And it's all included, all the hospital, all the medication, it's all included. That's amazing. But it makes me lazy as well because I'm not financially responsible. So I think we need to work harder in Europe to get people engaged, energized. In the US, you need to work hard to be successful. If you don't do it, you drop out. I think that's the cultural difference. On the other end, the approach of how to get people engaged. I worked in South Africa, in Namibia, in Australia. What I see, we're all human beings. We have all the same desires. Culture makes it a little bit different in approach. But bottom line is we all want to have a good life.
Excellent. And I mean, one of the things you mentioned just before was obviously disengagement. One of the evidences of disengagement is a sick rate. And I think you quoted, 12% sick rate in companies which are disengaged. So how does that compare? Well, how does that compare to a company which has got very good employment engagement?
What I see, and I saw a study just a couple of days ago in a big hospital in the Netherlands, sick leave is about 3%. And the director, the CEO said, we're not looking at sick leave. We are only looking at employability. How can we support you to be employable? How can we support you in your well-being? Other companies have sick leave 9 to 11%, and especially in healthcare, the average is 9% during COVID and behind. And then I see that engagement is low as well. So there is a real connection. If 70% of sick leave is influenced by the leadership, then engagement is the same. So if I'm not engaged, I have the opportunity in the Netherlands to call in sick and stay home for a long time because I'm financially covered. If I'm not covered, I need to work harder to get back at work and try to stay there. So I think if you have 3% sick leave, which is medically normal because we all get the flu, cancer, and car accident, whatever, then 3% is normal. All above is influenced by the leadership style of organizations. So what we focus on is that we start with the C-suite of an organization, have a talk with them, tell them about engagement, about happiness at work. Tell them that happiness makes money, but you need to make a choice. You need to work hard to get to that level. And then start from the top or from the behind back to the front line. And we call the front line the real professionals. The cleaning lady, the lady working in a bar, people on the street. Those are the people that are really earning the money for a company. And what leadership must do is support and facilitate them in the way, like I said, how can I support you? Invest in people. And then people will be engaged and sick leave will drop down with about 80%. So the 9% and the 3%, that's the difference of 80%. So if I have fully engaged people in the organization, sick leave will be low, must be low.
And I'm assuming that then leads on to what I said at the outset in terms of the employee retention as well. Because you've got two areas, haven't you? You've got, well, number one, you recruit the right person, but then they come in place, or they come in to a business and the actual, what was sold to them in terms of the company value isn't the value, so they're going to leave. And then you've got people who are in the business who, as you just said, that when a new leader comes in and they create a new company values, which aren't actually reflected in the way the organization is, that they leave as well. So if you've got any examples or good examples of where somebody's gone into a business where you've got low employee engagement, and then they've actually, as you've said, changed the leadership style, and that's then increased the employee engagement, and then what were the steps they took to actually achieve that?
Well, I think to have a positive approach as well, in the US, you have Zappos with delivering happiness. Zappos is selling shoes online. They created a program called Delivering Happiness. If you want to work there, you need to fit in as a new employee within the 10 family core values. They are on their website, and you are tested in a way for 6 weeks, whether you fit in or not. And if you don't fit in, they don't blame you. They give you money to leave because they say it's cheaper to give you money than if you stay and you're not aligned to our core values. Knowing that as a positive approach, if I come in an organization where sick leave is high and engagement is lower, I need to see what the culture is, and we call it the DNA approach. We are going to find out what the company DNA is. How is the culture? How are we doing the things that we do? Why are we doing that stuff? How do we talk about our colleagues at the coffee machine, at the printer, and that kind of stuff? What are the non-written ground rules? Because we can have ground rules, we can have social contracts, how to behave, but it's that unwritten ground rule that is deciding what your culture is. So behavior that is accepted by each and everyone needs to be addressed. We need to find out what is positive, what is neutral, and what is negative. So if we find a negative ground rule, we need to redefine that rule into something neutral or positive. And I must tell that that's a lot of work, but it's so amazing to do that kind of stuff. It's created by an Australian guy, Simpson, and he created it years ago on the university, Steve Simpson, and he checked what is the ground rule that we all know. So you ask people, can you describe one of the ways you behave in your organization? And people will write it down. And then you can see, is it negative? Is it neutral or positive? Then you talk with the people and say, hey, we see that this is part of your culture. How can we address it? And how can we change this in a positive way? And because people are thinking about it, not me as an external consultant, it's the people that need to address it. They will change it in a positive way. But it starts with connecting with those non-negotiables, with the why of the organization. So if we see some sort of behavior and it disconnects with the core values, then we need to go back to C-suite and say, hey, this is happening in your organization. Did you know this? 9 out of 10 times they have no clue. Because you know it, CEOs are on the top level of the organization. Sometimes they have their own elevator, their own lift to get up to their department. They never see normal human beings. They only talk with their equals. Well, I would love to see a CEO on main floor behind the counter where people are coming in, that they hear and see what's going on in that organization, because they need to support. And I think that a lot of CEOs are not really connected to the professionals that are earning the money. They think that they earn the money. And of course they do. I'm exaggerating, but it's the real people that are doing the real stuff that earn the money and create that customer experience. And if employee experience is high, customer experience follows. So we need to be aware that if you want to be successful as an organization, you need to have successful human beings within your organization. So they need to be engaged, and we can call it happy, but engagement is the scientific word, and happiness is sometimes, happiness. It needs to be solid. It needs to be scientifically proven. And the outcomes are amazing. Like you said, sick leave goes down with 80% if people are fully engaged. Retention goes up with 40 to 60%. Well-being goes up with more than 60%. Productivity goes up with 15%. That means that if you work 5 days, the outcome is almost 6 days. And that's a lot. That's almost 20%. Customer loyalty goes up with 10%. And very important, especially in healthcare, the mistakes are going down with more than 60%. So if you're in the ICU, you hope that you have really engaged employees over there, because if they make a mistake, it can cost you your life. So it's really important, because scientifically, we know about 16 fields within an organizational structure that will be positively influenced by having engaged people. 16. I wrote it in my book about profitability 2.0. I addressed them. It comes from Oxford, from Harvard, from Warwick, from TNO in the Netherlands, from Gallup. It's really scientifically well known that if we invest in human beings, that engagement goes up. And people aren't leaving. Yeah. Because if they're happy at work, why would they leave?
Well, they wouldn't, would they? I mean, and just to go back just one little step, when you talked about the ground rules, and you said that that you'll ask, or Pete, you'll ask when you're in a business, can you describe one of the behaviours or the ways that you behave in the company? So just from a practical point of view, yeah. Do you prompt them on?
The point is, it can be a simple question. If somebody calls in sick, we take care of them. That is a positive ground rule. The negative version is, if somebody calls in sick, he's just lazy.
Yeah. So do you prompt people when you ask that question, or do you just wait to see what they say generally? And is that question specifically around the ground rules and how they behave around those ground rules, or is it a general question at that stage?
Most of the time, we try to keep it as general as possible, because sometimes if you want to be too specific, you miss some of the ground rules because they are unwritten, so you don't know them. So what we like to do is have a good conversation. And I use actresses dressed up, one in totally yellow hair, yellow robe. The other was green, and they served coffee. And everybody knew, of course, that they were fake because they were so dressed so special. And they just asked the question, why are you working here? And people start telling stories. And if they tell stories and you record it and you listen to it, you can find those statements in their stories that you think, this is one of your ground rules. This is one of your beliefs. This is what you really think that happens in your organization. Then you write them down. And that's classic consulting work. Just write them down. And then note whether they are neutral, positive, negative, and then start a conversation with the same group of people and say, hey, we found out that this is one of your ground rules. How would you redesign it to make it more positive? then people start thinking about their own behavior, reflecting on it, and making a new one. So this is not something we do with computers. You can use some emails and asking questions. That's the cheaper version. What we like to do is to have a real conversation. And if it's 1,000 people, you interview 80 to 100. Every interview in a team of 5-6 people is 30, 45 minutes. So it won't take that much time. But what we like to get is the storytelling about why do you work in this organization? Why do you get up early in the morning, drive to your work there for 8, 9, 10 hours, then leave for home? Why are you doing this? Is it only to earn money? And that's okay. There are a group of people that want to earn money because they have amazing hobbies and they want to celebrate their life with outside of the office. I'm fine with it. I don't tell them that's wrong. But I still want to find out what is it that gives you that energy. So that's why we use a tool for the start that is asking where do you gain your energy from and what is costing you energy. And then we start talking about those issues. And it helps us immediately. First of all, people have their own reports so they can see what they think, what their energy level is. Then we have coaches that can help those individuals to make the next step. We have the overall information, and then we do that team interviews about the unwritten ground rules. And because we talk about them, it makes them aware of something they didn't have a clue.
Okay, so in your opinion, what would be the top three things that if an organization, so you go into a business or you see a business, what are the top three things that an organization should get started with to enhance and improve their employee engagement?
I think it starts with what we started with, knowing your non-negotiables and walking and talking your core values. If the CEO isn't walking the talk, forget about it. It's not going to work because I'm looking at the CEO. I'm looking on his Facebook. I'm looking on LinkedIn. I see what he's doing. So I need to be aligned with his way of working as well. So I say to all the C-suite, know exactly what you're doing because I'm watching.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Then the second one is train leadership into asking questions, not telling people what to do. As leader, you're not the best in the team. You're the best facilitator in the team. But what we see, especially in the Netherlands, that here part of the culture is you're the best employee. You can't earn more money because you're on the top of your level. Oh, we make you leader. Then we have the worst leader ever, and we lost the best employee. So train those leaders that they know what their position, what their role is, and that they start asking questions. And thirdly, and the most important part is, work on the teams that they start believe what you're saying. Because as long as they think, yeah, nice story, but I don't believe you, stop it. It's not working anymore. And that's what you see in a lot of organizations. And then in Western Europe, you go into sick leave. In the US, you had a great resignation. A lot of people are running away because they knew that they could do hybrid work instead of being in the office the whole day. So life is changing. And overall, we have the demographic situation that we have less employees available for the workforce. So we need to be much more valuating those employees. And we think, oh, they're just employees. No, that's why I call them professionals. if they do what they need to do and we ask them, hey, how can we improve your business? They are professionals. They know exactly what they want differently. Why aren't we asking them, and why are we as leaders or buyers telling them what to do and say, this is good for you? Well, they don't believe you anymore. Maybe they did 20 years ago, but nowadays, younger people, especially Generation Y and Z, are going to make hand moves that I'm not going to show. But they say, well, we know better than you, my dear friend. Most of the time, it's males that do that kind of stuff. And they say, I know better, so go ahead, I will walk. And they go walk outside the office, go and work somewhere else. And the funny thing is that we all know this, because this is positive psychology. We know this since 1976. Martin Seligman explained it to the world. But it's so hard for leaders, especially the C-suite, to behave in that positive way. You need to think, I don't like the word change anymore. It's about development. If I come in and say, oh, we need to change the culture, then I'm saying your culture is wrong. If I say, hey, the world is changing and we need to develop our culture in a more Gen Y situation, then people will say, I get your point. Yeah, let's work on it. So make it positive. And if you say, oh, you're not working hard enough, you didn't reach your KPIs, if you don't change, I'm firing you. You can say, okay, this is not top. This is not amazing. What can I do to support you to get to that level? It sounds so different. It feels completely different for the employee, and he will work harder because he is accountable. He is responsible for his employability. So give him that opportunity to have the autonomy, that belonging, that competences that fit into the purpose.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because that point one that you said about walking the talk for your core values and the non-negotiables links directly into a number three. Because if you're walking the talk, then people do believe you're a person of integrity, and therefore they will believe what you say. So in terms of that, because I mean, I think that's really a nice 1, 2, 3 of the key things that you need to do. So let's say, for example, you're walking the talk. How do you then communicate it, that new message, the new world order, the new development situation? And then also, what sort of like roles does reward and recognition? How do you, because communicating it's one thing, and then backing that up with reward and recognition, I would guess, is another part of that driving employee engagement.
It's about communicating, and we use a lot of videos where we make animation in it. So we tell the story by animation, because reading stuff, it's not of this generation anymore. So show it to the people and then give them interventions that they can use to improve their quality. So most of the time, let's say you have an issue at home, you need a psychologist, then you need to go to your boss and ask if you can go and see a psychologist because you can't pay it yourself. Then the boss knows that you have psychological issues. We know from research that you will never have any promotion anymore. If you can go to somebody outside and say, hey, I work for this company and I hear that you can help me with my psychological issues, and the bill will be paid by the organization, but they don't know for whom it was, then I feel much more recognized, much more blessed, much more appreciated than I need to have permission to do that kind of stuff. So open the field for people that need a coach, that need a trainer, that wants to know what their tick is, where they want to work. Give them some sort of, we call it Fitcoins. Bitcoins is well known. Fitcoins is about vitality. give them an amount of Bitcoins that they can use to support their employability. It's their responsibility, but support them. So if I have an issue, I'm in a fight with my partner, I'm leaving her, I need to find a new house, it's not working, I get financial issues, you get the point that that person is no longer productive. If he needs to go to his boss and ask for permission to be supported, he's not going to do it. If he knows that he can call a number and get support and that it will be paid, but it can be anonymously done, he will do it. Because nobody wants to fail at work. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. So what I want to see in the world, that we look after the well-being of people by supporting them. And that's that ABCP, and then it includes some money. And I did research. If you put in $1 in a human being on this way, the outcome will be $2.5 to $4 US dollars. And that's what we call the ripple of impact. It's not the return on investment. It is, but it's called the ripple of impact. So I invest in you, in your well-being, in your employability, and the outcome is 2, 3, 4 times as high, because I feel recognized. I feel that arm around my shoulder, which is not allowed anymore, but, you know, in a metaphorical way, I feel supported by my team, I feel supported by my leader, not manager, leader. And I will be very, very positive about work. I will tell that story. I will be the ambassador. At the party, I will say, oh, you should come and work for my company because, man, they are amazing. They really support you if they need you. So we are supporting people. We are creating fans. And that's what it's all about with engagement. You should be a fan of your own organization.
No, you should definitely. And I like that example of the Bitcoins, because you can do that in so many different ways. And it's about that support. People working in an organization where they know, as you said, that they're supported and that they feel that they're taking responsibility, I think. And that comes back to the earlier point you were talking about, is people feeling that they have autonomy to actually deliver in the role, as opposed to being told what to do at every stage. So can you give me an example of the best employee engagement program or best employee engagement story that you've seen in your extensive career?
Well, I could say, oh, you need to follow my program. But the point is, we adjust our program to what's happening in the organization. Because it's all about human beings. And I'm working in company that are purely industrial. They make bricks. They make stuff to isolate houses. And I work in healthcare and for the government. We're all human beings, but the environment is different. So, yeah, of course, I have that approach. I do the energy compass. I do the request. I can use SurveyMonkey to get the questions. But the most important part is talk to people. And then make that set of written ground rules, which, you know, we need to discuss this. We need to make animation videos that people can watch on their phones that we will discuss when we have a team meeting. And then you show that video and say, what do we think about this video? Most of the time, a team meeting is about productivity. It's about the results. It's never about you as a human being. So I think that's the most important part. Put human beings in the first place and the money will follow. So that's
why I would agree.
Our program, Happiness Makes Money. And that sounds easy. So as a Dutchman, for me, it was easier to pronounce this kind of stuff. But The fun part is that if you really see all the research, you think, yeah, the money will follow. Look at Zappos. I don't know whether you know it, but go online.
I do, yeah.
Zappos.com. Tony Hsieh and Jen Lim, who created that company, and Jen Lim is now the CEO of Delivering Happiness. They have an amazing program. Can we use that program one-on-one in the Netherlands? No, we can't. No. Can we use parts of it? Yes, we do. And what I like to see is some organizations hire me because who I am. And I walk the Camino. I've done the way. You know the movie Walk to Santiago.
Yeah.
Well, I did it twice. So I know how to walk my talk because I've done it. And walking in Spain, I found what my non-negotiables were. And every presentation I get online, I show them what my four core values are. And I ask them to challenge them. Ask me questions. How would you perform? Because if I can't answer that question about myself, how can I support a team?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about my program. It's about who I am and what story I'm telling. And of course, we have some workouts and I have a team of people surrounding me. And sometimes I use Nienke and the otherwise I use Karen. And most of the time, the best team members for me are females because they have that empathy, that touch, that female touch that can really influence people. And I will tell my story. This is it. And then other people say, well, relax a little bit. And then I put in the others and we soften it a little bit. And we tell them, this is the steps we're going to take. And we call it the design factory. So we talk with you. You are the CEO. We say, what are your issues? And you know them, of course, by heart. And then we say, how can we fit them in our design factory where you, as CEO, are responsible for the outcome? We help you to design it because we've done it before. But it's your company. It's your human beings. It's your employees. We can support you. And that's what we want leaders to do, support their employees. So I can only support the CEO. I'm not going to tell him or her what to do, even if I know what they should do.
Yes. So that's, I think, really important in terms of just bringing that all together, and because we've come to the top of the hour. So what I always ask people to do, because it's very clear, you know, you find out quite a few figures earlier, that even if people didn't want to do all the things that you've been discussing for the past hour about employee engagement, the fact that you talked about the retention, you know, up by 60%, sickness down by 80%, loyalty up by 10%, mistakes, especially when we're talking about healthcare, if you said down by 60%, then those figures there should make even the most cynical person who doesn't really believe in engagement to think, actually, even if I don't believe in it, it makes sense, i.e., as you said, happiness makes money. So if there's one thing that you could leave the audience with out of everything you've said, what would it be? What's the one thing that you'd say the nub of, you know, yeah, just one thing to leave us with?
Yeah, well, I think the most important part is that we still talk about human resources and we have a human resources department. Words matter. And as long as we don't see those human resources as human beings, so it's human being leadership. It's not management.
Yeah.
It's leadership. Take a look at yourself as human being and try to look from your point of view as human being to the others. Don't see them as number 1,084. No, they have a name. They are human beings. If you do that and you take a little bit more time to get to that money, by the end, the money goes up much higher. So change your attitude towards human beings. That's the most important part.
Thank you very much, Paul. So, well, I think that has been an illuminating period of time, and really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about your area of expertise, which is, you know, employee engagement. And as I say again, happiness makes money. If you can't remember what I said, go back, listen to the podcast, and just listen to those figures and the difference that actually an engaged workforce actually makes. So, Paul Torval, thank you very much.
Hakeem, thank you very much for having me in your lovely show.
My pleasure.
Boom. Another great episode of the Hands-On Business podcast. This time with Paul. Thank you very much for the short, concise way you explained why you need to engage your teams and your employees. Because if you did hurt anything else, remember, if you engage your team, if you have engaged people and employees, retention is up by 60%, sickness is down by 80%, loyalty up by 10%, and mistakes are down by 60%. So the question I would ask is, why wouldn't you want to engage your sales team? Because as Paul says, happiness makes money. Don't forget to check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com. And as always, subscribe, like, and share with your friends, colleagues, and anyone else who you think may be interested. But most of all, keep the feedback coming so that we can continue to improve and give you more of what you like. Hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, and as I always do, keep listening and keep growing.